Hello and welcome. This is Chantal Cecile-Cura, continuing with the Autism Conference on the transition to adulthood. And I'm really excited about this next presentation on Autistry Studios, building a working ASD community. I'm going to give you a little description, and then I'm going to tell you more about the two presenters that we have online. Janet Lawson and Dan Swearingen, founders of Autistry Studios and the parents of an autistic teenager, will discuss their journey creating a program to support ASD individuals. Over the last 6 years, they have grown the therapeutic pre-vocational program from 4 students to over 50 students. They have created a new approach they call project-based therapy and have also launched the Autistry Model Employment Program. They will talk about the many lessons they have learned, the methods and interventions that have worked, and those that haven't. Janet is a licensed marriage and family therapist and a psychotherapist specializing in work with teens, adults, and families with autistry spectrum disorders. She's the founder and CEO of Autistry Studios, a therapeutic pre-vocational program for ASD individuals. Janet has years of experience in theater and film, as well as software development. Dan Swearingen, Autistry CEO, was educated as an astrophysicist but has mainly worked in software development for private industry and government projects. Outside of work, Dan has always loved building things, and Autistry Studios leverages and challenges all his skills. Dan's job is to maintain technologies for the students to use in their projects and to teach the students how to safely use them. So before I welcome Janet and Dan, I just want to remind you that there is a box there if you're online where you can write in questions. And at the end, when we will be answering questions, if you're on the phone, you can actually dial in *2, and I'll see a little hand on my computer that someone's on the line and wants to ask a question. So now, thank you, Janet and Dan, for being here. I'm really excited about you talking about Autistry Studios.
Great. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Chantal. That's wonderful. This is Janet, and I'm really happy to be here this afternoon to speak to you all about Autistry Studios and our journey along the way of creating it. Our quick 30-second hit list of who we are, we can go to the next slide there, Dan, is What we do at Autistry is we offer pre-vocational workshops for ASD teens and adults. We provide counseling for individuals and families. We foster, encourage, and nurture independence. And we provide supported initial employment experience. And we'll talk a lot about all of those things. But the biggest thing we do, I think, is to create a strong, vibrant, supportive community for our ASD individuals and families. So the outline today, we talked a lot together about what we should talk to you about and what you might be interested in. And we kind of narrowed it down to why we started Autistry, how we started Autistry, our experience of the autism spectrum working with these kids, and our strategies to help them become more independent, because that is our goal, to make, you know, to help them become independent, productive members of their community. We founded Autistry in 2008, and this was at a time when our son, who's now 19, was just looking forward. We knew where he was going to go to high school. We kind of had a good idea of what the high school years looked like for him, but we really couldn't see what was available for him after high school. And we couldn't see it because there was really nothing there. So we talked a lot, and we thought, okay, what if we started a little group of teenage kids? And we looked at the transition age kids, those who were just getting ready to leave high school or just left high school. Most of the people in the beginning came out of my private practice as a therapist, because I realized that working with them one-on-one in a little room trying to talk with them was really not working very well at all. I was trying to talk with them when communication was one of their big issues. So Dan and I started a group with 4 kids, and we have a barn studio behind our house, and we started making things with them. building things. And in the process of building things, we realized that it freed them up to talk. And in the talking, we got to know them better and better, and were better able to help them with the issues that they were facing.
We also found that working with them on a project, they could really show us exactly what they struggled with. And we're talking kind of beyond their communication issues. It's really the difficulty they have in getting something that they want to do and getting that thing done. And being able to work with them on basically projects that were their own ideas, it just became a really good way for them to show us what they struggle with. And also they were actually interested in solving these problems that came up because they came up in the context of a project they were interested in.
Right, so when we had leverage, we had buy-in, we had their interest, it was something they wanted to do, and how sad to not be able to do that which you really want to do. It's one thing if you fail at a math class and you don't like math anyway, okay? But if you really want to build this go-kart, or if you really want to do this painting, and everything is getting in your way. Your executive functioning isn't working. You can't self-regulate enough to calm yourself down to do it. You're left with a great desire and no way to make that desire real.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we found. And so we started with the four, and our initial thought was that these four kids would come and they would, we'd do a group therapy thing, and then they would leave. And then we'd get another group. Well, in reality, they didn't want to leave, so they stayed. So then we thought, okay, so we started another group of four, and then another group of four, and pretty soon we're up to 16 individuals in four different workshops, because we never have more than four or five in a workshop, and that just got untenable in our house.
Mm-hmm.
So in 2010, we relocated to a very large, it's over 10,000 square foot warehouse in San Rafael, and at that point, the program just immediately doubled. And now we're up to about 50 students.
Mm-hmm. The development of the age range was kind of interesting. When we got Ian, we were so focused on getting Ian into the right high school situation, and it wasn't a huge fight with the district, but it was a little fight with the district to kind of get what we wanted. We got that in place, and then we were looking ahead, and it was like, oh my God, there's just nothing after high school. Or nothing after he ages out at 22 out of the public education system. And so we initially started with kids on the spectrum who are just past high school because we thought, okay, that's where the problem was. And any of you out there with a 20-something child on the spectrum knows that they're a real stubborn challenge. and we were finding this, and we're going, boy, it might be easier to start with some of these guys when they were younger. And so we actually backed our age bracket down to 13. And so we started groups with younger students. And then actually some adults kind of came out of the woodwork at that point. And we were frankly skeptical whether what we did would work well with someone who was in their 40s. Or their 30s, and it was really interesting to see that the level of growth in the older students was identical to what we saw with the younger ones. And so we're now quite open to significantly older students, and now we have a one student in his 50s, and we have a couple students in their 40s, and it's a great experience.
It's also, for us as parents, gave us great hope that even though our son learns and develops at a slower rate than a neurotypical child, that he will continue to grow and develop throughout his life, that learning and growth is lifelong. I had kind of, in my head, I just thought, well, you kind of top out at your mid-20s, and maybe you'll discover something or try something new in your early 30s. But what we're finding is that no, that's not true. The brain is amazing, and the human spirit is amazing in terms of its ability to continue to grow and to continue to learn throughout the lifespan. So that gave me great hope.
Mm-hmm. So who we work with is, and so it's interesting, and we've been really analyzing. It's like, who do we end up working with and who do we not work with? So we work with ASD individuals with basically normal underlying intelligence. And I should tell you that my experience, I know a lot of our kids don't really score well on traditional IQ tests, and that's not what we mean when we say basically normal underlying intelligence. We kind of look more at the person we're dealing with and look, you know, is there a sense of humor? Is there that spark? And, you know, we see it in virtually all the kids we meet. And so we tend to disagree with a lot of the statistics that talk about how much mental retardation there is present with individuals with ASD. We see that they have massive language processing issues that they're struggling with, but inside there's basically a full horsepower intelligence struggling with these issues. So we work with low verbal autistics. We work with high verbal Asperger's. We tend to group our students into kind of different groups based on their verbal ability and their age. People come to us who've had the old PDD-NOS diagnosis. We have people where they've been diagnosed with either ADD or ADHD, but basically through our intake process, we came to feel that what we do works for them. And we also work with some clients who just don't have a formal diagnosis, but again, we kind of look at, will the process that we use, is this going to be useful for this individual or not? Behavior level, what we find a way that really brackets all of our students is that the students we work with are students who have been able to live at home and attend school outside the home. And it's this is just something we noticed in looking back through all our records is that students who've been wholly homeschooled for one reason or another, we don't see them in our program, and we're not sure what that means. The students that have had to live their entire life outside their own home but in a group home of some sort, that tends to not be a profile that we work with. We do have students who've spent time in group homes and then came back to their family home, and that's absolutely a profile that we do see.
And we do see some of the older students who are leaving home, and we encourage this, leaving home, and if the group home is a good one, is a good fit, and is made up with other ASD individuals, so it's a high challenge, stimulating environment, then those are really great. But I think when we talk about the group homes, we're talking about the ones who really are more caretaking situations where there's not much challenge, there's not much expectation of change or growth for the individuals. They're kept very safe, but they're not really encouraged to try new things and to grow.
Mm-hmm. We've taken the position and we're kind of happy with how it almost always works out that we really, you know, once an individual's in their 20s or so, it's really helpful for them and it's helpful for their psyche and their view of themselves as a person to help them live outside the family home. And we see that when we encourage it and support it, there's great growth that happens to the person and their feeling of self-worth goes up. And yes, there's absolutely lots of stresses involved with moving away from the familiar home, but that stress, if there's proper support, that stress can cause really great growth.
Yeah, and to be honest, I mean, there is no real growth without some stress. So a stress-free life is not really conducive to a productive, thriving life.
When people come to us, it's very interesting. You know, we see such a wide variety of kids. I mean, we have, you know, the low verbal autistics, and then we have the super talky Asperger's, and you'd feel like there's the old story of, you know, you've met one autistic, you know, you've met just one autistic. But our experience is yes, that's true, but then there's some interesting things that we find in common across all the kids we meet. The families almost always report no friends or few friends, and the parents almost always do see this as an issue, and it is an issue. If you without friends, you don't have a social support network. The profile we often see is that the kids are obviously very bright, and they keep failing their classes, even though they can, as our example, they can know the name of every Greek god, or they know the name of every anime character of whatever their favorite genre is. And we have several students who know to minute detail any of the hundreds of different Star Wars characters.
But we'll have trouble with the narrative of the story.
Yes.
You know, so that's something we work when we talk about our methods. We use a lot of narrative therapy methodology with our kids.
Yeah, and the kind of the problem everyone's bringing to us also is unable to achieve apparently reasonable goals, and even these are often goals that are adjusted for with the student in mind. But there's several profiles. The families where their child was a pretty verbal Asperger's and may have done quite well in high school, and then they attempt to go to college, and it's like they just bounce off the front door. It's the failure so prompt and bad, and really catches these families by surprise and catches the child by surprise. And that's a fairly common profile that we work with.
It's fairly common, and it's also very frightening, because these are often kids who have done very well in a very narrow field like electronics or mathematics, and they've excelled in high school at that one thing. They go up, and their identity over these years of being in high school is based on their ability to be the top of their class in mathematics. And so that's who they see themselves as, and that's who they are. They go off to college, and all sorts of other things are happening. There are more people mm-hmm. in the classroom. They're not hearing everything really well. There's a lot of stimulation. They tend not to meet the people in their class, so they don't get any help from their peer students. And they start to isolate, and pretty soon they're falling behind in their classwork. And the next thing you know, they're flunking. And then we get a call from the parent saying, oh, my gosh, my son has been locked in his dorm room for 2 weeks.
Right.
And this is devastating, and this is, you know, this is actually traumatic. So when they come back to us, they come to Audistry after having failed at something that is really important to them and is part of who they see themselves as being, what we're working with is trauma and helping mm-hmm. them through that and building back up a self. So it's very, very important.
Yeah. This is a setback that I think is what we've seen is it hits the families that have the high verbal Asperger child. It's the one that hits them from the side, because they really kind of didn't see it coming.
Yeah.
Our son is a lower verbal autistic, and you know, so we're already well prepared that any college experience our son has is going to have significant support. And you know, so we're already prepared for that. These other families were often able to go through high school with very limited support. The child got good grades and got good SAT scores and got accepted to the college, and everyone's kind of breathing a sigh of relief. He made it, and then this setback just comes as such a surprise and a hurt for everybody. It's really a hard one, and quite common. The other thing that's very interesting and fairly common is that almost all of our students have great difficulty describing a reasonable long-term goal for themselves. And that's really essential, is to help them come up with a reasonable target. And the experience we have with much older students tells us that it's okay to have ambitious goals, but you have to make sure that you're placing them at an appropriate point in the timeline. If you have a low verbal autistic child, then, you know, college immediately after high school is probably not possible, but that doesn't mean that never. It means college is eventually a goal, and then the idea is come up with what's the ramp? What's the ramp that gets them to that goal?
What we always say is that everything should be on the table, but it's a very long table.
Yeah. In the end, what we realize we're working on is independence, and independence is a funny word. It kind of implies solitary ability. But actually, when we talk about an individual being independent, it's actually that individual is able to progress well through their community. And so our working definition of independence is that it's the ability to plan and make progress towards a desired long-term goal while adequately handling immediate needs as they arise. And that this is both of these vectors, so the vector of an appropriate long-term goal that they make progress towards, and dealing with the day-to-day stuff, the laundry, the shopping, the bills, both of these areas are all incredibly difficult for our kids in general to navigate. And so we kind of focus on both of those. We want to point out that the, you know, if you're not careful, there's the Unabomber model of independence, which we really don't want, you know, your child living in a small shack in the middle of nowhere. And unfortunately for many of our kids, that actually sounds kind of attractive because interpersonal relationships are so much work for them.
And it takes them so long to develop the relationships and the friendships that can be supportive. So helping them build a community of friends is also part of what we do.
Right. So to get towards this, we kind of realized, okay, so what do you need to become successfully independent? And we realized that there's basically skills. There's a certain number of skills that you just need to acquire, and that adult skills are slightly different set than child skills. And it's the basic life skills, and also the skills of the particular career goal or career idea that you're heading towards. Executive function. So this is basically the ability to plan and deal with problems as they arise, how to adjust the plan in the face of problems that prove to be significant and have to be where, you know, you have to change your plan. Resiliency, which is the ability to cope with unexpected setbacks. And flexibility, the ability to alter plans. And then social commerce, the ability to work constructively with others. And help, you know, advocate in a positive way for help that you need.
And all of these key dimensions are what make up project-based therapy. Okay, because working on the projects, we are obviously building skills because we use many different types of power tools. It's very challenging. Executive functioning, when a student comes to us and they have decided the project they want to do, and remember that each individual student has their own project. We don't, you know, we do some group projects, but mainly we do individual projects, what they want to do. So they have to make a plan, do a drawing, a list of tools that they need, materials that they need, a budget. There's a lot that goes into a project. This is not this is not art therapy. It's not expressive therapy. It's not about a kind of cathartic experience. This is really about pre-vocation, getting, you know, making a plan, creating your project, getting it done. And resiliency, there are setbacks. There is no project that comes out just the way you thought about it. And I think it was Iris Murdoch, the writer, who said that every book is the ruin of the perfect idea. And we see that in our projects. Every made project, it's the ruin of that dream of a project that you had. So part of it is learning self-regulation and being able to adjust your expectations. And social commerce, being able to get help from other people and to be able to offer help as you've mastered a skill, to be able to offer that help to someone else. We now have a young man working with us who's been with us for a number of years as a student, and he still is a student, but he's become quite adept at making foam swords. So he's in his early 20s, and he comes on the weekends and works with the high school kids who want to also make these swords. And he's come up with a recipe for making them. He knows how to do it. He teaches the younger kids how to cut the foam and how to use the sewing machine to make the covers, all of that. So coming, you know, mastering a skill and being able to share it with somebody else, that is absolutely crucial for independence and to be able to find your productive place in a community.
So the pattern of work that we found best supports the goals that we're trying to build towards is that regular long meetings. Basically, we figured out that a meeting time of any less than 4 hours really just didn't work. This is really something that I learned in my experience managing software engineers, is that if I give an engineer a task that's much less, and if I give an engineer less than half a day to get a task done, in general, they can't get it done because it takes a certain amount of time to kind of settle in, understand the environment, and then there's a period of actually getting the work done, and then there's kind of the exiting process. And that so we made sure that our workshops were a significant chunk of time and that we meet with people at least once a week. We keep the group static, so it's the same kids, same staff week after week. We keep the class size quite small, 4 to 6. Economically, it'd be wonderful for us if larger groups work, but we've watched what happens when we try to get the class a little larger. You can see the more introverted individuals, and of course, you know, on the spectrum, many individuals are very introverted. You can see that in the four to six range, almost everybody's pretty comfortable with that social size.
And that's an example of where we learn by our mistakes. You know, so much of this we did, you know, it's not like we started with a plan and then executed it because we knew exactly what was going to work. We didn't. We've spent 6 years listening very carefully and trying things and say, does this work, does it not work? One of the things that really didn't work, even though it worked financially, but it didn't work for the kids, is to have the large groups. As soon as it got over 5 or 6, they couldn't concentrate as well.
Yeah, the Shire students would just kind of duck down and hide and would no longer interact.
Yeah. It was also too many. It was too many relationships for them to have. There was too many points of connection that they needed to make.
Mm-hmm.
And it became chaotic.
Yeah. Very high staff ratio. Basically, you know, practically one-on-one. So for instance, a class with 6 students will typically have 4 staff. And the staff relationships are really important. As I'm sure many of you have experienced, your child's probably strongest relationships are with caregivers and teachers and things like that. And so we make sure that relationship's there and that it can be a strong one. The students start with very small projects at first, and then we pretty quickly move to projects that are quite complex and long. And so we're trying to work on breaking through the kind of instant gratification mode that many of our folks are, well, many kids today, period, not just ASD kids, getting out of the it's got to be done this afternoon to, well, this is going to be done in a few months and really working towards that. The students, because it's the same, you know, because it's a group of students that are a similar age and similar verbal ability, it's a good environment for them to actually start developing social relationships. And in the environment of our workshops, we you know, help those relationships happen and kind of facilitate the issues that come up. We also have a sit-down meal halfway through every workshop.
That one surprised me.
Yeah.
It's surprising. When we first started at the house, I would put out food because they were teenagers, and teenagers eat. So I knew that as a mom. So I would always have, you know, nice, healthy snacks. And then we realized what was happening is that they start to kind of congregate around our dining room table and sit. And so I thought, well, you know, it's 4 hours that they're here. Why don't we really serve a meal rather than just snacking for 4 hours? So I started making full meals, like a roast chicken and mashed potatoes and salad and, you know, nice big meal. And that changed the nature of the workshops in a very dramatic way. It became the meal and sitting around the table became the real social center. And that's when mm-hmm. stories were told and how was your week? And what movies they like, you know, a lot of talking about what movies were on and what was out and did they want to go to a movie with you. And it became a real essential part of the whole workshop. So we've kept that as we've gotten older. Even in the warehouse, we now have all of our tables. We have a big kitchen and we still do all the cooking. So it's all very much home style cooking and the kids all help, the students all help. And it has become a way of bonding with the kids and with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And the staff likes to cook, which is very nice too.
Yeah.
And we have, the other thing though that is interesting is so many of us are on different diets. Dan and I and Ian have been gluten-free, dairy-free, corn-free for about 15, 16 years. We don't ask that everybody else is, but we are. So we cook accordingly. Then we have kids who are on GAPS diet and vegan and vegetarian and no grain and no peanuts. And so we cook for everyone. Everyone, you know, there's something for everyone, which is really great. Rather than finding a common denominator, you know, which is, you know, we all eat grass or something, you know, but we put out something for everyone.
So we're starting to come up with tools to actually measure this, but the growth we see through the program, one of the key discoveries is, again, that growth capability is available at all ages. And that's to a parent of a child that has, you know, a long ways to go on many things that he wants to achieve. That's just really heartening. It's like, okay, so if you keep coming up with appropriate challenges, they keep growing. A really interesting one is we definitely work really hard with the individual students to manage behaviors that they have that might be destructive to them in social environments or in work environments. And, you know, absolutely work environments and social environments need to accommodate our children to a certain extent. But it's also fair to ask our children to come halfway. And what we've found is that our clients can gain control of virtually any behavior that they need to if we work with them to come up with strategies to help them manage the things that they have to struggle with.
And we help them with mindfulness so that they become aware of what they're doing. And part of that is being very, very honest with them and very direct. I see what you just did. That's not appropriate. Can we try to do it, and let's do it in a different way, and doing it right at the moment and really not ignoring behaviors and yet not shaming about behaviors. This is a behavior that we're in agreement needs to be dealt with. I see you doing it. Let's stop that. Let's do something else. And you do it enough times that pretty soon they stop themselves.
Yeah.
And it takes time. That's the thing. It takes time, and it takes rigorous honesty and mindfulness on the part of the staff as well as the students.
The confidence that's achieved in completing projects and working on projects, we've seen that it promptly improves mood and function outside of workshops. We have guys that are struggling with middle school and how, you know, socially everything felt great, and then they hit middle school and all of a sudden they feel left behind. And what we find is that the appropriate confidence that they gain in learning skills in our program, and suddenly they're calmer and more stable in school. And it's not that school's perfect, but their ability to stay centered and happy with themselves has improved.
One of my favorite comments was from a mother who told me that her son, who was being bullied at school, came home one day and he says, "You know, I get to go to Audistry and they don't, and I love it there. And at Audistry, they understand me, so it's okay." And just because he got that place in himself where he had something he was proud of, he stopped being bullied, not because he fought back or did anything extraordinary or outward to the kids, but because inside of himself he had a strength.
Yeah.
And that moved the line. For the kids who are bullying him, he was no longer a target.
Yeah, his whole posture moved into a way that just no longer attracted or supported being bullied. So social confidence is absolutely something we work on, and takes 1 to 2 years is pretty common. In fact, if we had to characterize the growth we see in all areas, it's that. It's very similar to the rate of growth that's seen with people that are recovering from a stroke. And if you think about the way that many autistics are having to learn different skills, they're really having to train parts of their brain to do something that it didn't know how to do before.
It's finding new pathways and creating new neural pathways.
Yeah, and that just takes time. I'll let you speak to the long-term vision.
Except for that mine isn't going to the next slide.
Which one are you on?
I'm on social confidence here.
Give it a sec.
I think I'm slower. So you can start.
Okay. So the long-term vision for Autistry Studios is to help teens and adults with autism, Asperger's, and other learning differences. That's our mission statement. I'll not just read that. Basically, our longer-term goal is we're adding kind of more and more programs. Our basic goal, initial goal, was pre-employment programs. In other words, getting people ready for work. What we found was as high as we could get an individual in that program, the step was still too large to become a competitive employee outside of us. And so we've created basically a model employment program, and that's a program that's within Autistry, basically producing goods and having the students participate in every part of that production. So the design of a product, the production of the product, the sales of the product, and things like that, and really letting the students be part of all of that. Go ahead.
And we're also reaching out into the community to create relationships with the business community locally to place our students in internships and with work. We have 5 students right now who are interns at the Buck Institute in San Rafael, which is a world-renowned scientific science lab where they study aging, and they're working with top-of-the-line, world-famous scientists in their labs, and it's a fabulous opportunity for them, and it's been a really good relationship between that organization and our organization. We're also working with the local Lego store and talking with them, and we have a couple of our students who work there, and we build stuff for them and things like that. So we, now that we've been doing this for a long enough time and we're really confident about our students and what they can do and we understand them well enough, we're really ready to reach out in the community and help them find a situation that is good and positive for them. When we first started this, I really thought that it would be, you know, kids would graduate from high school and then maybe they get a job coach and they'd go and get a job and to whatever level that they could work. But there's a big piece that we didn't know was missing, and this is the piece that we've been developing, which is that the individuals that we work with really need some time to develop their sophistication as workers and who they are and how they work and how to. We always say that at Autistry you start by doing what you want to do, and by the time you're leaving, you're doing something that someone else wants you to do. You know, project has changed.
Yeah. Okay, and that was kind of the end of our prepared presentation, and then what we really wanted to do was field questions from the audience and kind of work from there.
Okay, so there are some questions that have come in, and I want to remind people that they can use the screen to the left of the slides to type in questions. I have a couple questions or comments before.
Sure.
I remember when I first talked to you about this program, I was doing research for my book, A Full Life with Autism, and so you had just, I think, started out. And originally, wasn't your focus more on creating a social arena and working on the strengths that they had? And it then eventually became more of a pre-vocational program. Is that true, or am I wrong about
that? Well, it's true, but it's also not mutually exclusive. We develop the skills that they have to become,
right,
to help them find work that they are well suited for.
Well, and,
right,
and also absolutely, we start with their interests and strengths, and then we try to broaden them because, frankly, in almost all the individuals we work with, they do have strengths and interests, but they tend to be so narrow that it's not terribly functional for them.
Right. But the whole point, too, is that you're parents, and so you did this also because you had clients that had a need, but it's also because as parents you saw the need, correct?
Right.
Yes.
Yeah,
and our students,
really
our son's everywhere.
Yeah, you see him in
yeah,
all the pictures. But what happened was when Ian was about, I don't know, 3 or 4, I guess he was diagnosed at 3 years old, and about when he was 5 or 6, I realized that I was really spending more time working with him and talking with other parents than I was creating software. So I went back and got another master's degree in psychology and became a therapist. So I'm a therapist because of my interest in autism.
Yeah.
Right. So that's very interesting. I guess the point that I was trying to make, because earlier on today there was a young man on who works on creating new ventures, self-employment opportunities, back in North Carolina. So he was explaining his program. And my point was that sometimes as parents, we think we've had the school system here, and then they're going to graduate and they're going to do these things. But then they're looking for solutions. But a lot of the solutions that I hear about came because it was a community of people that was a mix of parents who had a need as well as professionals who were willing, and they don't have to be autism specialists, but I mean people that had something to provide, some kind of mentorship that could be useful, that came together. So you can create things that exist in places that don't have anything, as long as you have the willingness, the energy, because it is a lot of energy, and you have people there to work with.
Yeah. Well, exactly, and it doesn't. You're not creating the same thing. I mean, the tools and the things that we do at Autistry, we do because that's what Dan and I like to do, and that's what the kids that we work with like to do, and that's kind of what is happening here in our Northern California venue. But if we were in someplace else, it may be a different type of work and maybe different type of interest that the population would have. It's what we're talking about really is the mindset, the philosophy that you have when you create the program.
Right. And it's also takes the community of people.
Yes.
And, you know, parents have to be involved, not just it's not just about writing a vendor check.
Right. No, in fact,
and the other go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, in fact, we have found that success correlates with the involvement with the family. That the families that are involved with us, that we talk to regularly, have meetings with, and they're really part of what we're doing, the student is much more successful.
Right. And the other point, because you were talking about encouraging people to move out of the house or out of the home and to be more independent in their living situation is really a good point. But another point that I want to add to that is it's really important, or it's more successful to do that when you have something like your Autistry Studios or a job that you go to regularly or something that you do during the day that fulfills you.
Exactly.
If your home situation is changing, if you have something that you're doing during the day that makes you successful, then you're going to handle that change. And the big problem, I mean, you know, my son's 25, is that, you know, specifically in my area, for example, you have workshops, you know, which is great for some people, and then you have a few, like, you know, Vons type jobs, or you have nothing unless you can be creative as a parent and go out and find something.
Yeah.
And
right.
So, in fact, that's what I've been trying to do, and I have been doing with Jeremy, and, you know, other people are kind of getting together and thinking about, you know, ways we can support each other in the same kind of ideas that we have. But, you know, you've got to have something in your life that you're happy about and you feel successful at before you can make another major change.
I absolutely agree. In fact, one of the things that we do is we work really closely with people who are doing residential solutions, because they realize that just, you know, like Sweetwater Spectrum in Sonoma, which is absolutely gorgeous and a wonderful environment, does not have a work element to it. Okay, so it's a great residential, but there's, you know, part of the package is not the what do they do during the day. That's something that has to be created by other agencies or other people or something. We've been working really closely with agencies and with the people who actually designed and built Sweetwater to talk about this. How do these, you know, you have, it's all fine and good to have a beautiful place to live, but what are you doing all day? And
yeah,
so,
also,
yeah, it needs to go together. We don't do the residential,
but
we work really closely with people who do.
Right, and you would want it to be separate. I mean, who works in, I mean, I've had the flu all week, so I've been home 24 hours a day, and I'll tell you, I'm working at home, and I'm staying at home, and I'm doing everything at home. It's not fun.
No. I
see the social interaction. Yeah. I don't want to be in the same environment 24 hours a day, and, you know, it's not healthy for anybody. So going on to some questions here.
Sure.
So this person has four questions, and I'm going to read them all at once, and then we'll go back to them one-on-one.
Okay.
This is Dawn from Los Alamos, New Mexico.
Uh-huh.
Who pays for this? How do you keep it going? Do you sell the projects? Does insurance cover anything? Do parents pay a weekly fee? So let's start with who pays for this?
It's virtually all private pay, and then we do a lot of fun. I mean, the number one fundraising our number one fundraising target is our Opportunity Fund, which basically supports sliding scale fees for families that can't afford the full cost. The nature we took the approach of a program designed to work, not a program designed to be perfect for funding from the state or the government. And because we looked at other programs out there that had basically conformed themselves to be something that can get fully funded by the local regional centers and programs like that. And we knew what their limitations were, and then we went, well, so what do you have to do, what works? And we really came up with the configuration that we feel works, and now we're trying to figure out how to keep it affordable in the long run.
Right,
it is an expensive program.
That's a good point, because I know that Janet and I have spoken about this in the past, because I sort of had the same situation down here, and I had to laugh when I saw your video about trying to get vendorization, and then, you can't have a saw, and you can't have welding, and you can't have this because it's not safe.
Right.
And the point is that if you try and fit into all the regulations that exist to be able to get funding, that's why workshops look the way they do.
Exactly.
And that's why they are the way they are, at least in the state of California. Now, I'm not saying all workshops are bad. I'm just saying that there's only so much they can do, because if they're going to get funding from the state, everything's got to be safe, and if everything's safe, of course, and this is America where everyone sues for anything, then, oh, my God, we can't let them do anything. They might hurt themselves. But, that's how you learn, is by making mistakes.
Yep,
and if you have something totally safe, you're not evolving, like you mentioned earlier.
Right, and that's where, we use the phrase, we did not invent this phrase, but the dignity of risk. We respect and have a lot of faith in our students that they will take care of themselves as best they can around these tools, and that we're right there to help them. But things happen. And if we were to just keep them safe and wrap them in cotton, nothing would happen, and nothing would happen. I mean, they wouldn't grow. They wouldn't change.
Yeah.
Right.
So
who pays for it? It's private pay. How do you keep it going?
Boy, it's frankly sheer force of will.
Yeah.
and it's we're actually, for as large and as much we've got going on, when people look at us and go try to estimate our annual budget, they usually miss it by they're usually a factor of two too high. We do this on very little money, because we're really, we it's expensive, and we do everything we can to manage that cost. Just for scale, our actual cost for one student in a four-hour workshop is $200. And at full scale, parents are paying a lot of that, and then we're also fundraising to try and subsidize that as much as we can. Private insurance, health insurance is paying some for some families.
Because this is a therapy, and I am a therapist, and I have therapy interns working with me. This is considered group therapy, so families are getting reimbursed from their insurance.
But it's incredibly erratic.
Yeah.
The amounts and the processes. Basically, every insurance company and every family has a different situation on that, and so from our perspective, it looks like an incredible mess. But families are getting anywhere from 20% to 80% covered by their insurance. Some.
Okay. And do parents pay a weekly fee?
Yes.
Okay.
And so basically we bill, and again, it's so, for instance, we we tried fewer staff, we tried lower quality staff, we tried bigger classes, you know, and we kept ending up in one spot because our goal was growth. And then the good thing is that our other programs that we're bringing in, so for instance, the employment program where we're trying to sell the things the students are making, that one looks not nearly as costly, which is great. We're actually looking for someone to help us with the initial capital investment to get that program really going. We've done enough experiments with it to know that it works. But the great thing about it is that it'll be more like break even for us, which means it can be offered to the families at very low cost. But the students that are in that program are basically graduates of our other workshop program.
Right. That's great. So are people actually selling some things?
Yes.
Some projects that they've
they
made.
Are. It's very spotty. We've got some particular projects. We basically need. We're sitting down and working out a plan. We need basically a $50,000 investment to get it kind of kicked off. If you literally want to know what that's going to be spent on, that's going to be like a truckload of plywood, because we have a robotic woodcutter and things like that. So.
But do you have clients that are waiting for things, or are you waiting for the money first before getting the clients, or do you have sales and marketing already in place to?
So we have some products designed, and what we're doing is, you know, we have a workshop and we have saw blades and things like that. There's lots of other programs around us that don't have those facilities, but for instance, if we gave them a package of pre-cut wood. And they can do white glue. That's in scope for them.
Yeah,
and we would
basically be making kits for other programs, which is one of the things I'd like to do.
Yeah, and then it's actually, from a funding perspective, it's very attractive to go to businesses and say, hey, could you subsidize some of the wood so that this program can get this? And so we can offer it to them at a subsidized price and things like that. And then they can turn around and sell those also, the finished products as well. And so we're coming up with relationships like that.
That's great.
Yeah.
Wow, do you guys ever sleep?
No,
not enough.
We work Tuesday through Sunday, and Monday's our day off.
Basically, every now and then we get a cold, and we realize that's just God's way of making us take a break. So.
I know. I hear you. So Dawn from Los Alamos, who had asked all those questions, she said, this webinar has been very helpful. Great ideas to reach people in my community. Mm-hmm. And here's a question from Sandy in Sherman Oaks, which is in the L.A. area. Mm-hmm. Are you developing in other states with your model? Is there anything similar in Los Angeles?
Well, one of the things that we're doing right now is we are working – this is what we do on Monday, by the way. No, we're writing a training manual. Yeah. We're writing a training manual, and hopefully in the next – 6 to 8 months, we'll be able to bring people up here and train them, and then we could go down and help them make something like this in their community. We don't have any great interest in making, you know, micotistries, you know, little things all over, because I really think that you have to come from the community, and then we can help them.
Right, but what you're talking about is the idea, and then whatever it is that exists in the community and what the interests
people
have that are there.
Yeah,
we've
definitely found
it.
Some parameters that are kind of the magic parameters that when you stick there, you get pretty good results. And this could be, I mean, you could be in a forestry program, you could be in an agricultural program, you could be in a taking care of animals kind of program. Yeah. And there's certain things we found that if you configure yourself this way, it's very effective for this population.
And we had visitors last year from Denmark, and it was the guys that had started, what's that thing called?
Oh, Special Eastern.
Yes. So let me back up a step, because that's a really important story. And it's part of the question from the person in Sherman Oaks.
Yeah.
We've had people from all over the world come visit us, and they say the same two things, which has been really what kicked us off to write. Because anyone who's tried to actually sit down and write what they do knows how hard that is.
You're talking to someone who wrote 5 books. It's easy.
Yeah.
You got to have more than Monday to do it, though.
Yeah.
Exactly.
The same two things they said was, your program's great, and we've seen nothing like it. And, the Danish actually came to us because they have wonderful programs to kind of get people trained in to help support the software industry. And I'm a software professional before I was doing this, and they said, but we have kids who come in and they fail our entry process, and we don't know what to do for them. And I said, yeah, because that's really, I mean, basically we work with the kids that are not well suited to the software QA roles and things like that. I mean, it'd be wonderful if they would. It'd also be wonderful if my son wasn't autistic. I mean, you don't have a lot of control over where you're at with this.
Right.
And so it's, you know, we actually are going to start a software. We're actually working with some people right now to start up a chunk of our project that will be software and technology. Because I've got two students, that looks like it'd be a really good goal for them.
And Dan has a two-student rule. If two students are interested in it, then we follow it.
but we have the other 48 students for whom a software career is really not a reasonable goal for them. They don't have the compelling interest in that, and so we're trying to come up with something for them.
Okay, so have you had any, since someone was asking from Sherman Oaks, has anyone from L.A. been up there to visit and interested in discussing starting something?
Not yet. Well, yeah, actually, that's not true. We've had people, we have some people here who've sent their kids down to L.A. and to the help group and some of the residential places mm-hmm. down there who are now going, oh, well, when they get older, maybe they should come up here and be in Audistry. But we really haven't had, we've had students from Stanford come and visit and all kinds of places, but we haven't had people from L.A. really come up and see what we're doing.
Yeah.
Because it would be a natural, it's close enough to actually do it.
Yeah. I just wanted to remind people to come up, to write up any questions that they may have on the side there on the screen. You said you started what year? How many years ago did you start?
2008 is when we did our first workshop.
Yeah.
And you said that you still have the same four students who started then. Are they all four still with you now?
Two of them still are.
Two of them. And what happened to the other two? I mean, did they go off successfully somewhere else?
Let's see. One went off, but not terribly successful. I'm thinking the other two didn't have great endings there. But they're still in process. They're still young.
And part of it's really been kind of analyzing, you know, when things really don't feel like they're working, and really, frankly, in the last year, we finally got a real grasp on what's going on with the kids, where it didn't feel like great how it worked out. And that's just a really, you know, for anyone running a program, that's just a really important point, is to, you know, the successes are easy. It's understanding your failures and do you change to mitigate that, or do you understand that they weren't a good fit for you? Or and,
exactly, I know that must be really hard.
It is.
Yeah, it is. And so one very interesting factor is, if you think in terms of that, we get kids who are from low verbal to very verbal, and we get kids who are just having a struggle. In the late teens, early 20s phase is the majority of our students. And, okay, that actually is a pretty broad bucket, and you're already in a bucket where you're talking about kids that are having a hard time making progress. So it turns out about 10% of the kids that we get are not actually best described as people on the autism spectrum. They actually have some other thing that they're struggling with that hits enough items on the checklist that they can be mistaken for autistic, but that's not actually what they're struggling with. And we're now much better able to, because actually the way we work with the students, because if you look at our staffing ratio, there's basically one person who works a lot with your child 4 hours a week, week after week. And in the same environment and doing roughly the same process we've been doing for a while, and that actually pulls that child's issues into very stark relief, and you can really see what you're looking at. And so now we're better able to see that. The reality is that some of those kids our program is absolutely okay for, and in fact, you know, can be beneficial for them. But some of the other part of those kids, the way we work, especially the way where we bring up pretty firm boundaries and
that challenge
we, and we challenge and we push for progress, and that, that actually we found that works great with people on the autism spectrum. Well, if you're looking at someone who's in the early stages of schizophrenia, in fact, that's not the right thing to do with them, and it's harmful. And so we're learning to recognize that, and then what we do is we work with those families
to find
a situation that's better for them.
Right. Wow, what a great resource you are.
yeah.
There's so many flavors of autism, and then there's the comorbid issues as well.
Yeah.
Right. There's a lot to parse out.
I have to tell you that the saddest stories are, and we've seen this, it doesn't seem to have anything to do with, it can be, the child can be a low verbal autistic or even a really talky aspie, is some families, when their child gets into the 20s, the family just kind of accepts that that's what they have, and they no longer have the energy. You know, and that's really a biological thing.
That's it. It's about it's a biological thing. It's an energy thing. But this morning in my keynote, I was also talking about that age, as adults, we're transitioning ourselves oftentimes.
Exactly.
We need to take care of elderly parents, okay?
Sure.
So your normal neurotypical parents of neurotypical individuals, your kids are getting more independent. They still may need you emotionally. They still need you for a lot of stuff. But you can leave your 16 or 17-year-old at the house, or they can at 18 or 19 drop themselves somewhere. But while you have to take care of Ma and Pa who are getting old. But if you have someone who requires 24-hour supports, it's like, who do I take care of right now? Do I take care of my child or do I take care of my parents?
Yeah,
right.
Triage.
And it's really hard.
It is very hard.
And also the system's not there to help you because they make it harder for you.
Yes.
You know, everyone thinks it's so difficult when you're in school. You have no clue until you're in the adult services.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and then the problem is, you're right, there's a biological clock inside the parents that once your child basically achieves a certain physical size, there's parts in your brain that light up and go, and I need to step back because I need to be treating them like an adult. And that's independent of whether your child's actually ready for that or not.
Right. And then also, you have less energy when you're older.
Yep.
I totally understand that.
So it's come on, you guys take a day off. What is this? Do you slack?
How dare us?
Yeah. Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, and you know, we actually feel blessed by the abilities our son has.
Yeah.
You know, he's a sweet young man, and that's always going to serve him well. He does not need us 24/7, and in fact, he's getting more and more independent, and in mostly good ways. and it's great, and it's good because otherwise we wouldn't be able to put the energy we do into this. So.
Right. So here, a question came in, and I did have a question, too, but I'll ask this question first. This is Kelly from Cary, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, my daughter's 15. I started a school for her 7 years ago, and now I'm building transition and pre-vocational. The school is thriving. I'd like to come and visit your program and learn more. Are you open to a visit and collaboration?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
We should say, because the one caveat is we don't often let people come in during an actual workshop. We love meeting with people, but because the groups are really small and because our kids are not unconscious, when visitors come in, it's incredibly disruptive. And because the program costs the family so much, we really respect that we don't just bring in visitors all the time and disrupt the work their kids are doing.
But and we could work something out with it.
We do work things out. We absolutely can show people what we do and talk about it, and we love to do that. So.
Can you remind people of your website and how they best contact you? In case people aren't looking at the slides, because some people are just on the phone.
Yeah, it's www.autistrystudios.com. It turns out autistry.com works great too. So it looks like artistry, but it's an A-U-T at the beginning. And we Google extremely well. And the website has lots of ways to contact us, which we're very responsive on all of them.
Basically, we're Janet at autistry.com and Dan at autistry.com.
Yeah.
That'll get to us.
Yeah.
Now, I had pulled up your website. website here, which I encourage people to look at because there's also videos on it.
Yes,
but
right.
I noticed you're having summer camps. Now, are those summer camps only for the people that are there during the year?
No.
Or are you encouraging other people to sign up?
This is the first year that we have opened up our summer program to people who are not in Audistry workshops. So we're casting a much wider net,
mm-hmm.
and they're fabulous workshops because they've been designed by our staff, these camps. And we should note that we have an incredible staff. All of them have graduated from college. They're very, very bright. They're very dedicated, very creative. And each one of them, our four main ones, decided that they wanted to design a camp. So you could, each camp has a flavor, and it's the flavor of the person who designed it. Again, these camps will only be about five or six kids, and they're Monday through Thursday. And then we're offering nine of them this summer.
Yep.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And where do you find your staff? Since you have such good staff. Any hints for people there?
it's very hard to find good staff.
Yeah.
It turns out we initially thought that we needed people that were like highly skilled in certain, like the various skills that are needed in the workshop. It turned out the most important skill was that they work well with the population.
Yeah.
And
right.
Actually, it turns out that having someone who's completely ignorant of any sort of craft skill is actually better in a certain way because the student can watch the teacher learning. And it's like, okay, that actually makes the student much more comfortable to tackle a new skill.
Because so often, I mean, we do things, these guys come up with ideas. What was that one? Fiberglass trident.
Yeah.
Like Neptune's trident made out of fiberglass. Well, none of us had ever done fiberglass or made a mold. So, hey, you know what? YouTube. You can go on YouTube and you'll find a video about how to do that. So we all did. We learned it. We figured it out. And our resident artist, Amelia Sandy, who is fabulous, really studied how to do it. And sure enough, together, she and the student learned how to do fiberglassing, and they made a beautiful trident.
Mm-hmm. But we basically insist on an extremely high quality for the staff and find that just really pays off. And so there are periods where we're a little shorthanded because it's just taking us a while to find the right person to come in.
Yeah.
People that come in with one particular skill we found just never works out for us. It's an example is filmmaking, which occasionally the students want to do. But if someone comes in and says, well, I'm going to do film with the students, well, we kind of go the other way. We go from what does the student want to do, and we always start there. And so if the student wants to do film, that's great. But if they don't want to do film, it's just not going to work.
I like it when they do film because that's my background.
Oh, I know. No, and that's me waiting for kids that want to do software or computer projects.
Exactly.
And it's like,
and how come they don't want to quilt all the time? I love to quilt.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, that's why she only has one day a week off. She's hoping the other days they'll do something she wants to do for a change.
Exactly.
So there are actually no questions right now. So is there a story about a person who's really blossomed in your workshop that you would like to share? Because I think that brings home to people more when you share a personal story about an individual.
I think the Stephen story is the best.
I was going to say that. You want to tell it?
Yeah, I can. So Stephen is a... he is a low to medium verbal autistic, and Janet first met him as a freshman at a local high school, and he was quite good at math, had severe difficulty with his English and history courses and things like that, but got through high school, and he started working with us in the workshops when he was 15 or 16.
15.
Yeah, and he was accepted at Cal Poly in San Luis Obispo, and he was also accepted at Sonoma State, which is a local state college. And based on what we knew of Stephen, we had to kind of help the family away from Cal Poly in San Luis Obispo because that's quite a ways away from here, and it's a pretty big school. And we thought the environment would be too difficult for him. And he's been doing very well at Sonoma State. He's a junior now as a math major. And what's it? And he's living in the dorms.
And he still comes every week.
and so what he's doing is he's using us like a handrail to step away from his family and try to be an adult. And it works really well. And frankly, when his mom really wants to see him, she just kind of manages to drop by during his workshop time and make sure he has clean socks.
But he learned how to use the bus system so that he could come to the workshops on Friday. I should mention that our Friday workshops are college support. So all of the guys who on Friday are basically going to college, either the local community college or state college, or some of them have gone to Berkeley. Some of them have actually graduated.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and Stephen, the next rung Stephen needs to work out is what he's going to do after he has his bachelor's degree in math.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the best thing to do with a bachelor's degree in math is to get a master's degree in math. So we're trying to work on that next step with him.
But what's wonderful with Stephen is that this is a kid who had a one-on-one aide all the way through high school. And, you know, he working here, working with us, becoming more social, talking more, a little bit more outgoing. He was ready to take the jump to go to a college. You know, he doesn't have a one-on-one aide at college. He's doing it all himself.
Yeah.
And he's doing really well. But because we have the relationship with him and a very, very strong relationship with the family, he knows that he's got a net. He's got support. He's not alone.
Yeah.
So, and that is what we're trying to do here is really create a lifelong community of support so they can always come back. You know, say Stephen goes off and gets a job, and then that job falls through, and he can come back. He can come back to us. We'll work. We'll try to help him the next step.
Yeah. That was actually taught to us by some of our how we got some of our older students is they would had either a living situation or a work situation that they had been in for, in some cases, almost, you know, a decade or more, and then a fairly normal life thing happened, and they lost, you know, the business they were working at changed hands, and the new owner wasn't into supporting this position like the old owners were, and the person got turned out and didn't know how to get a new job, We had someone who had been living in New Mexico and had a situation that kind of worked, and then the roommate that she was with got a health issue and was no longer able to be in that living situation. And she ended up coming all the way back to live with her parents. And, you know, she's in her 40s and her parents are not kids, and everyone's very upset with that. So.
And that's the kind of community that we're trying to build, is that they can come back and, you know, there's a support system to help them. It may be not give them, you know, a house and a job and that kind of direct service, but to help the whole person, you know, help her be strong enough.
It totally makes sense because community is important.
Yes.
No matter what community looks like for that person or feels like for that person, you know, whether it's in an urban community or a rural community or whatever environment they like, the community has to do with the people that are around you.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that, in the end, that's your net.
That's where your friends are going to come from, and yeah. That's where the people you're going to marry come from. And
that's where your next job comes from, because somebody knows you and someone knows somebody who's looking for somebody or whatever.
Yeah.
Really good points. Is there anything else you'd like to share?
Let's see. we could just talk for hours.
Well,
I know.
And do.
And do often.
We did.
Not really. I think the biggest issue for us really is we know what we're doing. It feels like we're going the right way and we're building a community that's good. The hardest part is really getting the financial underpinning to sustain it. And we'll figure that out. We're smart.
Yeah. We're actually getting close in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
You've done such an amazing job so far. It's really amazing. You know, first of all, you started this, and now you're able to keep it going.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Well,
because,
when we started, Dan stepped away from his job, about 4 years ago?
It's more like 5 years ago now.
And because when we started it, we thought we had enough money to maybe keep it going for 2 years, and it's been almost six now. So
yeah.
We've stretched that penny pretty far.
Yeah.
In the fall, we're having our Now We Are Six party.
Yeah.
Wow, that's really amazing. That's something to celebrate.
Yeah.
We'll send you an invite.
Yeah.
Oh, I'd love to have it. I have to make a trip up to Northern California because my daughter's graduating from
Davis.
And that's going to be a family trip, but before my daughter has this idea that she's going to move off to Seattle in August. And so sometime between her graduation and Seattle, when she's up there by herself, we're going to have a girls trip. So I'm going to make a couple rounds up there to see some programs and people as well that I'd like to see.
Great.
So hopefully I'll be able to come by and visit you.
That'd be super. We would just love it. Yeah. And I put it out there for everyone out there that to really call us, write us. We're interested in what other programs are doing. And as we move forward and get our training program together, we really want to get the word out. Dan and I love to go and talk to communities. So, you know, we're happy to fly to you, you know.
Right. Make sure you put me on copy for that list.
Absolutely.
Okay, I will do that.
All right, so would you like to repeat one more time your contact information for everyone?
Yeah, the website is www.autistrystudios.com. And that's Autistry, AUTISTRY.com. And you can reach me at janet@autistry.com. And Dan is at dan@autistry.com. And if you go onto the website, you'll see many ways to email us or call us.
Thank you so much, Dan and Janet. It was really wonderful having you on, and you've really given a great overview of your program. And
thank you.
Thanks for being part of the change that we all want to see.
All right.
Thank you, Chantal. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. And to the listeners, come back tomorrow, and we'll be here for another day of talks. And goodbye once again, Janet and Dan, and goodbye to the listeners. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.